Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, November 2nd. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. Now let's get started with some local headlines for Fort Dodge. Our first headline today reads, Taking the Plunge, Special Olympics Polar Plunge returns to Fort Dodge. With temperatures expected to hover around 60 degrees on Sunday, not exactly the definition of, quote, polar, dozens of area volunteers will be taking a chilly plunge to raise money for a good cause. To them, 60 degrees might feel a bit, quote, polar. The annual Fort Dodge Polar Plunge in support of Special Olympics Iowa will begin at 1 p.m. Sunday at John F. Kennedy Memorial Park, located at 1415 Nelson Avenue. On-site registration and check-in will be from 11:45 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. It is inspiring to see the public come out and support not only the athletes in their community, but all Special Olympics Iowa athletes, said Maddie Corey, event coordinator. All proceeds from the event benefit Special Olympics Iowa. Last year, the Fort Dodge Polar Plunge raised $9,082. Currently, there are more than 60 volunteers signed up to take the plunge on Sunday. Each volunteer commits to raising at least $75 to donate to Special Olympics Iowa. And then on the day of the event, they, quote, plunge into the frigid waters, many of them while wearing wacky costumes. Last year, because of work being done on Badger Lake, Special Olympics Iowa brought in a 2,500-gallon tank to use for the event, which will return again this year. Organizers hope to return to plunging in Badger Lake in 2024. Megan Philippi, Director of Marketing and Communications for Special Olympics Iowa, said, Chickens, those who raise funds but don't plunge in the water, are also invited to the event, as are spectators, according to a release from Philippi. A post party will begin in the park shelter immediately after the plunge, where winners of the best costume and top fundraiser are recognized. For more information, to donate, or to register for the plunge, visit classy.org/campaign/2023-fort-dodge-polar-plunge-c502450. Our next local Fort Dodge news headline reads, Jail design focuses on the must-haves. And there's an editor note along with this article that reads, this is the third in a series of articles that examines the different aspects of the proposed new Webster County jail and the $45.5 million bond referendum that will be on the November 7th ballot. And now for the article. When a new jail and joint Webster County and Fort Dodge Law Enforcement Center was designed last year, it came with a hefty price tag, $57 million, and came with all the bells and whistles, like an indoor firing range, covered fleet parking, and a mental health wing. Upon seeing that number, Webster County Sheriff Luke Fleener took another look at the design and began to narrow down the must-haves and the would-like-to-haves. The first to go was the mental health wing. The state told Fleener that the county could build it, but the state would have to staff it, and the state has no intentions to do so. The rest of the frills were cut soon after. The second design was slimmed down and included a new single-story jail and support areas with administrative office areas for both the Sheriff's Department and the Fort Dodge Police Department, which was estimated to be about $48 million. The plans were scaled down even further to the current iteration of a 60,692-square-foot facility that includes just the jail and the sheriff's office administrative and patrol divisions. The total cost of the project, including the acquisition of land it would be built upon, is capped at $45.5 million. The project is being designed by the Samuels Group of West Des Moines and Venture Architects of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Both firms specialize in government buildings, like jails. The county has not yet identified a location for the facility, but Fleener has specified that it would need to be about 15 acres to allow for possible future expansion decades down the road. We've looked at 7, 8, 9 spots that are potentially locations where that 15 acres is available, Fleener said. For negotiation purposes, it makes good sense to first cross the first hurdle, which is, do we or don't we try to do this, he said. If the county were to select, or pre-select rather, a location at this time, he said, the landowner would be in a prime spot to raise the price of the land, he said. Fleener has noted that ideal conditions are near Fort Dodge city limits, close proximity to a highway, and with existing utility infrastructure. He's also said that the podular design of the proposed jail is such that if 40 years from now the Webster County Jail is bursting at the seams with inmates, the county could build what is essentially an exact copy of the jail pod next to the existing one and connect the two with a hallway. A common question Fleener receives is, what's going to happen to the Fort Dodge Police Department or the current facility? The plan is for both the Webster County Telecommunications Center and the Fort Dodge Police Department to expand on the first floor of the LEC, he said. The first floor of the LEC would be remodeled to give both the Telecommunications Center and the Fort Dodge Police Department more space. Like the Sheriff's Office, the Police Department, and the 911 Center have both outgrown their existing spaces. The second floor of the LEC would remain as it is now, housing courtrooms, judges' offices, juvenile court services, and Webster County Emergency Management offices. The existing jail floor would likely be used for storage for the county, Fleener said. At one of the informational meetings, a resident asked if it is possible to use the existing jail to house juvenile inmates who currently have to be sent to the Central Iowa Juvenile Detention Center in Eldora. Fleener said that isn't really an option because the facility would be required to provide educational services and other services that would cost too much. The county would also be required to staff it around the clock, which would mean the need for more jail employees. Operational and staffing costs of a new facility aren't expected to be impacted much, Fleener said. The jail may have to hire another food service worker for the kitchen, and they may need to hire an additional corrections officer or two, but they're not expecting a huge spike in new hires if the jail is built, he said. The final public information meeting about the jail will be tonight at 5:30 p.m. at the Fort Dodge Middle School. Tours of the existing jail will be available from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday. Our next local news story has a headline that reads, Disciple to bring Christian rock to Fort Dodge. Concert is Friday at Larmor Ballroom. Christian rock band Disciple will make a stop at the Larmor Ballroom in Fort Dodge Friday as part of its Skeletour. Doors will open at 6:30 p.m. The band will take the stage at 7 p.m. The Larimore Show is part of a tour that is taking the band all across the country. Skeletor has 16 stops through April 20th, 2024. It includes shows in 13 different states. Bringing a band of this stature to Fort Dodge is a joint project spearheaded by Wendy and Gabriel Casciato and some of their friends. They worked with several other churches and businesses to make the concert happen. It started with a couple from another church in town that we know, Josiah and Amy Kaufman. We connected in a different venue and realized we both like music and working with bands, said Wendy Casciato. We both had a vision of bringing music to Fort Dodge that isn't normally here. People really value bands that are high in quality and also have a high quality message. Gabriel Casciato had actually seen Disciple live before and thought it might be a good fit for Fort Dodge, but he wasn't sure it would happen at first. They put on an amazing show. It's heavy metal, which I like. I thought, why can't we bring them to Fort Dodge, he said. They said they reached out to the Larimore, and the management there was willing to waive its rental fee, which is helping to keep the costs of the tickets low. Local businesses also offered to serve as sponsors for the concert. They were able to see our vision and wanted to support it, said Wendy Casciato. The Larimore is in the beginning stages of their rebranding, so they were very excited to bring in a quality artist. Tickets for the show will be just $10 for general admission. A VIP package, including a meet and greet with the band, will be just $25. Tickets are available on the band's website, discipleRocks.com, and they will be sold at the door. They can also be purchased through Larimore Ballroom website. The Larimore will have drinks and snacks available for purchase as well. The band includes Kevin Young, Josiah Prince, Andrew Stanton, and Joey West. They are based out of Knoxville, Tennessee. Formed in 1992, Disciple has recorded 12 albums and 3 EPs, played thousands of shows worldwide, headlined tours since the late 90s, has 15 number one singles, sold hundreds of thousands of records, received 2 Dove Awards, and multiple nominations. Had its music featured by ESPN's NFL Live, WWE, Fox Sports, as well as in commercials for CBS's CSI Miami and Criminal Minds, and more. You know, rock music isn't the most popular music genre right now, but it's also the music genre that will never die, Young posted on his band's website. Rock music always comes back around. And with that, I know what we've been called to do, and that's to do our best show to show Christ to people with our music and with how we interact with them both on and off the stage. Disciple was recently part of the Winter Jam Tour and had a stop in Des Moines at the Wells Fargo Arena. We have made the ticket price very reasonable with the hope of allowing as many people as possible to attend. We are not trying to make a profit, but instead trying to bring the band in to make a positive impact on our community, said Wendy Casciato. Our desire is that this band with a great message could be a positive influence on our community, especially with all of the violence we have had of late. Churches providing volunteers include Crossway Church, Prairie Lakes Church, and St. Paul Lutheran Church. Wendy Casciato said most of the churches in town and surrounding communities are helping promote the show. Business sponsors include the Larimore, Iowa Sportsman, L&M Ethanol, Kurt Bacon Body Shop, Justin H. Roush LLC, Walker Bike Shop, Josephine Manufacturing Company, 365 Mechanical, Auto Drive, Modern Sound, Pizza Ranch, and Bloomers on Central. Jimmy John's, Hy-Vee, Walmart, and Dunkin' Donuts are providing food donations, and the Fort Dodge Fine Arts Association has provided promotional support. They have all been able to see the value of working together to do something unique and positive, said Gabriel Casciato. The response has been overwhelming. It's beyond what I was expecting, he said. And now turning to local obituaries for Fort Dodge, we first remember Kevin Hood. Kevin M. Hood, age 49, of Virginia and formerly of Fort Dodge, passed away on August 20th in Florida following a short illness. A rosary will be prayed on Saturday, November 4th at 9:45 a.m., with a visitation from 10 to 12 p.m., and a celebration of life service at 12 p.m., all at the Loffersweiler Funeral Home. Next, we remember Mike Olmsted. Services for Mike will be at 1:30 p.m. Monday at Grace Evangelical Free Church in Eagle Grove. Visitation is 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Faust Funeral Home. Next, we remember Linda Anderson. Linda M. Anderson, age 71, passed away Tuesday, October 31st at Southfield Wellness Center in Webster City. A memorial service for her will be at 4 p.m. Saturday, November 4th, in the chapel of Loffersweiler Funeral Home. A visitation will begin 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. And turning to a news brief for Fort Dodge, we have this headline. Humboldt farmer gets solar power grant. A Humboldt County farmer is one of the beneficiaries of the rural investments President Joe Biden announced Wednesday. John Myers received an $18,656 rural development grant, according to an announcement from the White House. That money will help pay for installing a 22-kilowatt solar array. The president announced more than $5 billion in spending, largely in rural areas. It will go toward better adapting agriculture to climate change, as well as expanding high-speed internet access and improving local infrastructure. The funding comes from infrastructure and inflation reduction laws, which Biden helped champion through Congress. And now turning to local sports headlines for Fort Dodge, this one reads, Strong Nucleus Returns for Triton Men. Chad Helly would describe his Iowa Central men's basketball team as, quote, a work in progress at the moment. And for the veteran head coach, that is perfectly fine. Last year, the Tritons finished 15-15 overall and 8-8 in the ICCAC. Posting a 9-5 record competing at home inside Hodges Fieldhouse. Back from that team are sophomores Tyrell Branch, Deuce Blake, Mickey Wilson, Miles Fant, and Chase Johnson. Jordan Fenderson is a transfer from Truman College in Chicago. Fant played in 29 games last year with 24 starts, averaging 11 points and 4.6 rebounds per game. Blake was inserted into the rotation after the holiday break, starting 18 and posting 8 points and 3 rebounds a night. Wilson saw action in 26 and Branch in 22, with Johnson making a handful of appearances. Sure, we may have some guys back, but really just Mike and Deuce saw quality minutes on the court, Helly said. There's a big difference between practice and games, and for those just getting adjusted, they are figuring that out. But that's fine. Will we look the same November 2nd as we do February 2nd? I highly doubt it. Will we have the same starting five? Probably not, and that's fine too. They are flanked by newcomers Chase Lowe, Jaden Smith, Riley Edwards, Randy Latham, Davion Gaston, Tereus Walker, and I.D. Coleman. Edwards, who set the Southeast Polk career scoring record, is the son of former Fort Dodge Senior High head coach and Iowa Central assistant Brad Edwards. Lowe played at Charles City, and Gaston graduated from Helly's alma mater, Western Dubuque. "It's a learning curve for the newcomers," Helly said. "There is just a different speed to the college game compared to high school. We do so much more movement, and you cannot get flat-footed, or you'll be beat no matter what you're going against." As a senior for the Rams, Edwards scored 438 points, shooting 41% from the field and 33% from the three-point line. He also had 98 rebounds and 57 assists. Lowe averaged 15 points and 6 rebounds a game for the Comets last winter, while Gaston posted 17 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, and 2 steals a night for the Bobcats. "We'll mix and match the lineup around here in the early going to see what we have," Helly said. "They've got good attitudes and are working hard." The varsity reserve roster includes St. Edmund graduate Jackson Palmer, who is a freshman guard. Helly will be assisted by former Triton standout Kai Kramer and Malik Kelly. Kelly joins the staff this season after coaching and playing for Central Lakes in Minnesota. Up first for Iowa Central will be the Mount Mercy JV on Thursday night inside Hodges Fieldhouse. Our next local sports headline reads, "Crooks has double-double in exhibition." The dateline is Ames. They entered the game at the same time, but this time it was on opposite sides and in a new venue. Bishop Garrigan graduates Audie Crooks and Molly Joyce began their freshman seasons in college basketball. Crooks, the school's all-time leading scorer and rebounder, suits up for Iowa State and Joyce for Truman State. The Cyclones beat the Bulldogs 88-68. In an exhibition contest. Crooks, last year's Miss Iowa basketball, had a double-double in 18 minutes of action. She had 14 points on 6-for-10 shooting. She pulled down 11 rebounds for the Cyclones. Joyce had 8 points, hitting 1-3, and was 3-for-3 from the line in 19 minutes. And I think we have time for one more local sports headline for Fort Dodge. This one reads, "Staying Alive." Behind an overpowering 10-0 run to close the second set, the ninth-ranked Iowa Central volleyball team took care of Hawkeye here Wednesday night in Region 11 tournament action. Scores were 25-13, 25-20, and 25-15. The Tritons, who are 29-5 overall, will now face number 4 Kirkwood on Saturday in the semifinals. The Eagles, who are 31-7, knocked off Southeastern in straight sets last night. In prior years, only regional tournament champions earned an automatic bid to nationals. However, that has changed, with wildcard selections being awarded this fall. With a top 10 ranking and resume that features several wins over rated teams, Iowa Central is likely to earn one of those spots if they are unable to claim another postseason crown. Still, ICC head coach Sarah Horn definitely wanted to earn this one. Freshman Natalie Hagedon sparked the closing rally in the second set, serving things out from a 20-17 Triton deficit to a 25-20 victory. Iowa Central took its first lead of the set at 21-20, erasing a 5-point hole. The Tritons started the third in command, scoring the first 4 points while taking a 12-4 lead on the heels of recording 21 of 25 points during that stretch. Maya McLean added a key ace during another late rally that helped seal the deal. Uriah Garrison had 10 kills. Naomi Chichaccio, 9, and Mercedes Matlock added 7 to lead the way. Matlock also had 25 assists with 17 digs. McLean finished with 15 digs, 3 assists, and 2 aces, and Emily Goodner tallied 5 kills. Alex Hiracheta added 7 digs and Olivia Sturgis 3 kills. Iowa Central went 13-2 at Hodges' Fieldhouse this season, a place that has treated them well over the past years. The Tritons have won 3 consecutive regional titles after placing 2nd the 2 years prior. They have also won at least a share of 6 consecutive ICCAC Division II regular season championships. Along with Iowa Central versus Kirkwood at 3 p.m., 11th-ranked Des Moines area will play Ellsworth in the other semifinal at 1 p.m. Both matches are set for Boone, with the championship also to be played there on Sunday at 1 p.m. And you are listening to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette on IRIS, Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's news for Mason City. And now turning to our first Mason City headline. It reads, Lichson RV announces new hire. Jolene Mitgard has recently joined Lichson RV in Forest City as the RV Service Warranty Administrator, according to a press release. A graduate of Forest City High School, Mitgard attended Kirkwood Community College and Kaplan University, where she majored in business and marketing. Mitgard was previously employed as a warranty administrator at Pritchard's Chrysler of Forest City. When asked what aspect of her new job she looks most forward to, Mitgard said, having the opportunity to visit and serve Winnebago owners along with their furry friends, being part of a team of professionals with a goal of creating customer satisfaction and lifelong loyalty to the Winnebago brand. In her free time, Mitgard enjoys watching Hawkeye football, cheering on the Minnesota Twins, golfing, watching HGTV, and spending time with her family. And as there's no local news updates at this time, I think we'll turn to some state news. Our first state headline reads, Iowa company faces a blizzard of litigation over massive data breach. An Iowa-based national meal delivery company is facing another class action lawsuit in a blizzard of litigation over the alleged loss of customer data in a massive cyber attack. The latest lawsuit against Pure Foods, which does business as Mom's Meals, was originally filed in South Carolina before being transferred to U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Iowa this week. It is at least the 11th class action lawsuit filed against the company in the past 2 months, although several of those cases were recently consolidated into a single case. Mom's Meals, based in Ankeny, is a national meal delivery company that serves tens of thousands of individuals with special nutritional needs, providing them with ready-to-eat meals. The company is being sued for allegedly failing to properly safeguard customers' personally identifiable information, including protected health information that would include names, billing information, medical diagnostic codes, health insurance information, and medical treatment information. The customers were allegedly required to share their personal health information with the company so that meals could be tailored to meet their nutritional needs. The lawsuit alleges the company acquired and stored customer information in a manner that allowed third-party cyber criminals to gain access to the data on January 16, 2023, for their own marketing and sales purposes. The total number of individuals who allegedly had their data compromised is approximately 1.2 million, according to the most recent lawsuit. That lawsuit claims the company didn't learn of the January 2023 data breach until February 22, 2023, and that customers weren't informed of the matter until August 2023. The customers remain even today in the dark regarding what particular data was stolen, the particular malware used, and what steps are being taken, if any, to secure their personal health information going forward, the lawsuit alleges. The lawsuit notes that the Federal Trade Commission has concluded that a company's failure to maintain reasonable and appropriate data security for consumers' sensitive personal information is a, quote, unfair practice in violation of federal regulations. Attorneys for the newest plaintiffs argue that a single individual's personal information can be sold on the dark web at prices ranging from $40 to $200. In addition to unspecified damages, the most recent lawsuit seeks an injunction prohibiting the company from maintaining customers' personal health information on any cloud-based database. The cases have yet to be granted class action status by the courts, and Mom's Meals has yet to file a response to the specific claims of the various plaintiffs. The plaintiffs in the newest case are represented by Paul Doolittle of the Charles, South Carolina law firm of Poulin, Wiley, and Anastapalo. Our next statewide headline reads, Union Pacific eliminates management jobs as part of a plan to speed decision-making. The dateline is Omaha. Union Pacific is trimming the ranks of the railroad's management employees as part of the new CEO's push to eliminate layers of bosses involved in decision-making. The railroad, based in Omaha, Nebraska, said Wednesday that it is eliminating less than 5% of its roughly 5,600 management jobs. Everyone who is losing their job was encouraged to either apply for a job helping operate or maintain Union Pacific's trains, or to stay on for several months to help tackle one of about a couple dozen special projects. Fewer than 275 management jobs were being eliminated, but the final number of cuts will depend on how many managers take other jobs with the railroad. CEO Jim Vena made streamlining the organization one of his first priorities after taking the job in August. You can't have 9 levels from the CEO to the people who actually do the work and expect that the message is clear. The decisions are made clear, and there isn't some hiccup in the decision, Vena told investors last month. And I want to drive it so that we have less layers. And that means with less layers, the people out in the field are empowered to make the right decision, he said. A spokeswoman for the railroad said Wednesday that the management layoffs are part of the larger effort to change its culture and, quote, focus on empowering employees on the front lines to drive decision-making. Before the layoffs announced Wednesday, Union Pacific eliminated about 100 operating jobs recently, in response to a decline in the number of rail shipments with the economy in flux. But both sets of job cuts represent a relatively small part of Union Pacific's total workforce of about 33,000. The railroad is one of the nation's largest, operating with 32,000 miles of track in 23 western states. The head of the Federal Railroad Administration questioned the wisdom of the cuts of train crews and maintenance personnel in a letter to Vena after federal inspectors found hundreds of problems when they visited Union Pacific's massive rail yard in western Nebraska this summer. Safety has been a concern across the industry after a Norfolk Southern train derailed in eastern Ohio in February and spilled hazardous chemicals and caught fire. And now turning to some national headlines, this one reads, Stock Market Today. Wall Street rallies on hopes the Federal Reserve's rate hikes are done. The dateline is New York. U.S. stocks rallied Wednesday after the Federal Reserve indicated it may not need to pump the brakes any harder on the economy. The S&P 500 rose 1.1% in its first trading, coming off of a third straight monthly loss. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 221 points, or 0.7%, and the NASDAQ Composite jumped 1.6%. Stocks built on gains as Treasury yields eased in the bond market after the Fed announced its decision to hold interest rates steady as expected. The yield on the 10-year Treasury sank to 4.76% Wednesday from 4.92% late Tuesday. Much of the drop came after the Fed noted higher bond yields and shakiness in financial markets may be slowing the economy on their own. However, yields were already easing after several mixed reports on the economy. One report from ADP suggested hiring accelerated last month by employers outside the government, though not by as much as economists expected. A separate report said U.S. employers were advertising slightly more job openings at the end of September than economists expected. The Fed has hope for softening there, which could take pressure off inflation without requiring many layoffs. A third report said U.S. manufacturing contracted by more last month than economists forecast. Big U.S. companies continued to report stronger profits for the summer than analysts expected, though that often hasn't been enough to offset worries about higher yields. DuPont fell 8.2% despite reporting stronger profit for the latest quarter than analysts forecast. It gave some financial forecasts for 2023 that fell short of analysts' expectations as it sees weaknesses in China and other challenges. Estee Lauder also pointed to slower growth in China, among other factors, when it cut some of its financial forecasts for its fiscal year. Its stock tumbled 18.9%. On the winning side of Wall Street, chipmaker Advanced Micro Devices rose 9.7% after it reported stronger profit and revenue for the latest quarter than forecast. Its revenue forecast for the end of 2023 disappointed some analysts, but it also pointed to growth in 2024 coming from the artificial intelligence boom. Big tech stocks were also winners Wednesday, along with other high-growth stocks typically seen as the biggest beneficiaries of easier interest rates. Gains of 2.4% for Microsoft, 1.9% for Apple, and 3.8% for NVIDIA were the three strongest forces pushing the S&P 500 higher. All told, the S&P 500 rose 44.06 points to 4,237.86. The Dow gained 221.71 points to 33,274.58, and the NASDAQ added 210.23 points to 13,061.47. Earlier in the day, stock indexes were mostly higher across Europe and Asia. And now, turning to Mason City obituaries, first we remember Philip Darwin Baker. Philip Darwin Baker, age 73, formerly of Mason City, passed away October 27th at Iowa Veterans Home in Marshalltown. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, November 1st, I guess that was yesterday, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, located at 126 3rd Street Northeast in Mason City. Visitation was held 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Next, we remember Mary Louise Davis. Mary Louise Davis, age 97, of Mason City, died unexpectedly on Saturday, October 28th. A celebration of her life will be held at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, November 7th at Park Cemetery in Nora Springs. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, November 6th at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel in Mason City. In lieu of flowers, please donate to a nonprofit of your choice. Next, we remember Dennis Harris. Dennis R., or Denny as he was known, Harris, age 74, of Mason City, passed away Sunday, October 29th at Mercy One North Medical Center in Mason City. A celebration of Dennis's life will be held today at 2 p.m., Thursday, November 2nd, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel in Mason City, with Mark Doble officiating. Denny's family will greet relatives and friends 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home on Thursday. And here's a news update that just came in. The headline reads, Early Voting Going Well in Cerro Gordo County. As of November 7th, Election Day approaches and local city council and school board races wind down, early voting is still available. And Cerro Gordo County Auditor Adam Wedmore says it's been going well so far. We see a rush right away, and then it slows down, and then it will pick up back up, Wedmore said. We expect Thursday and Friday to be busy, and Monday to be the busiest. As of Tuesday at closing time, 658 residents had cast ballots countywide. Of those votes, 476 were cast in person, 153 via absentee ballot, and 29 from healthcare facilities. Of those ballots, 379 were cast by registered Democrats, 188 by Republicans, 90 from people with a no party, and a single Libertarian voter. Not voting at healthcare facilities is monitored by a bipartisan team. Wedmore said the deadline to request an absentee ballot has passed. Residents can vote at the courthouse on Friday and Monday, Friday until 4 p.m. and Monday until 5 p.m., and on Friday from noon to 6 p.m., and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Mercy One North Iowa Cancer Center. Wedmore said that the turnout thus far is about what he was expecting during an election with no state or nationwide races on the ballot. He said there isn't a lot of historical data to go by because of a change in voting dates. Right now, we're trending to be on average, Wedmore said. When I say average, we only have two elections to go back to because in 2019, the city and school elections were combined for the same day. School board elections were previously held in September. Wedmore said the turnout was around 16% in 2019 and 2021. Wedmore says it's easy to vote regardless of whether a resident is registered. He said anyone of voting age can come to the auditor's office in the courthouse with an ID in order to register and vote on the same day. He added that if the address on the ID doesn't match where the voter currently resides, something confirming the voter's residence is required. That it could include a tax statement, vehicle registration, utility bill, or cell phone bill. Anyone who prefers to vote on Election Day can find their polling place on the Cerro Gordo County Auditor's website. Wedmore said there have not been lines to vote early at the courthouse, but some residents like to wait for Election Day. It purely comes down to personal preference and what works for the voters, Wedmore said. Some precincts will be busier on Election Day, and you may have to wait a few minutes to get into the booth. And now turning to some local sports headlines for Mason City. This one reads, High School Volleyball. Riverhawks and Lions receive all conference honors. Mason City and Clear Lake volleyball players received all-conference honors as announced by their respective conferences last week. River Hawk senior Megan Tobin was a unanimous selection to the All-Iowa Alliance North First team after leading the team with 203 kills, the third most in the conference this season. Tobin also had 53 blocks, second best in the conference. Gwen Pfizer and Abby Stoberg were named to the second team. Pfizer's 274 digs were the third most in the conference, to go along with 23 ace serves. Stoberg had 315 assists, 104 digs, and 23 ace serves. Michaela Trask, Allison Brandt, and Isabel Hardy were all honorable mention selections. Clear Lake's Zada Johnson was a unanimous pick for the All-North Central Conference. First team, after finishing eighth in the state with 478. She also had a team-high 311 digs to go along with 31 blocks and 29 ace serves. Maddie Ott was a second-team pick for the Lions, too. The junior middle had 115 kills this season, with 78 blocks, third most in the conference. She also had 22 ace serves. Sophomore setter Alvina Payne was a third-team selection after leading the conference with 630 assists. She also had 164 digs, 30 ace serves, and 23 blocks. Hampton Dumont Cal's Aubrey Showalter was also an all-NCC first-team pick after finishing with 284 kills, which was second best in the conference. Aubrey Gronewald was on the second team, and Abby Dreyer on the third team. And now turning to Dear Abby, Abby responds to two letters today. The first one has a headline that reads, "Holidays become less fun with the in-laws around." They write, "Dear Abby, my daughter's in-laws have no place to go on holidays. They have two children, but haven't spoken to one of them in several years, so my son-in-law is their only family close by. I enjoy entertaining and having family over, but I really don't care for their company. It's a different vibe when they're here because her father-in-law, Sam, and my husband drink too much and talk politics, both activities I avoid. They know how I feel, but make comments behind my back, thinking I don't hear them. My husband loves their company and goes out often with my son-in-law and Sam. My daughter understands how I feel. She doesn't like to cook or entertain, but will host a holiday once in a while. However, it doesn't solve the problem because I end up doing a lot of the work and I miss not entertaining in my own home. Please advise." And it's signed Catch-22 in New York. And Abby replies, "Dear Catch-22, I'm not sure why you feel it's your responsibility to entertain your daughter's in-laws on every holiday. Discuss this with your husband when he's sober and tell him you don't like it when he and Sam get drunk, talk politics, and make snide remarks behind your back. Inform him he should be more respectful, or the in-laws won't be invited to your home for the holidays anymore. Nowhere in your letter did you mention your daughter's mother-in-law. Do you have anything in common with her? If so, spend most of your time with her and your daughter, or once the meal has been served, ask them if they'd like to go out to a movie, get some exercise, etc. That way, you won't be forced to stick around when the boys imbibe and indulge themselves in their favorite subject." And Abby's second letter has a headline that reads, "Revelation spills out on fishing trip." They write, "Dear Abby, recently my current husband went on a fishing trip with my brother. My brother was drinking and confided to him that my ex-husband cheated on me. My brother was present when it happened. I was shocked, to say the least. I felt so betrayed by both. I can't believe my brother would keep this secret from me, but my ex-husband has some dirt on my brother as well. I sent my brother a text telling him how upset I am about his having kept that secret from me. Had I known the truth, it could have changed my life in so many ways. He wants to talk about it with me, but I'm not interested in doing that right now. I don't know if I can get past this. Can you advise me if I'm doing the right thing?" And it's signed Betrayed in California. And Abby replies, "Dear Betrayed, I understand why you're furious, and it might be better if you don't discuss this with your brother until you have had a chance to cool down. While it's logical that you might not be able to trust your brother again, I do think that at some point you should hear him out. Once you have done that, you will be in a better position to decide whether you want to have a relationship." And that concludes today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, November 2nd. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. At high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. Chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.